The rest of the world calls Miami the Magic City. Fidel Castro called it a den of gusanos, or capitalist worms.
Y los gusanos, los privilegiados, los parásitos, y los...
Even so, a lot of people credit Castro for making Miami the nexus of the Americas. They say Miami could not have become an international metropolis without the entrepreneurial drive of the Cuban exiles who fled Castro.
In 1960, Miami was barren.
Bernie Navarro is past president of one of Miami's most powerful Cuban exile institutions, the Latin Builders Association.
The Cuban community, what they did, made everything quicker. Now we have the influx of the Latin American communities coming in, and it's much easier for them to do business.
The only thing that gets me upset is when they say we were a sleepy southern town.
Miami native Arvemore Parks is the author of Miami, the Magic City, and a prominent South Florida historian.
We were a very vibrant town in 1959, 1960. You know, that's the era of the Fountain Blue Hotel and Frank Sinatra and the Rat Pack.
Like a lot of non-Cubans, she disputes the idea that Miami was just a tropical backwater at the time of the Cuban Revolution. Miami's seaside glamour and proximity to Latin America, she adds, could have made it the hemisphere's dynamic crossroads with or without Fidel. Both sides have a point. Miami's advantageous locale may have guaranteed it a booming future, but the Cuban influx certainly helped make that future happen sooner. Moore Parks, for example, points out that Miami-Dade County's population had reached 1 million people at that time. It felt like what she calls an optimistic metropolis. But all the same, Miami lacked adequate capital, the sort of financing base that builds major cities.
This was a tourist place.
Bernie Navarro's father, Gilberto Navarro, helped found the Latin Builders Association after escaping Cuba in 1961.
People who come from Latin America, in order to make business in the United States, they need to go to Chicago, need to go to other places in order to make business, because even the banking industry was obsolete over here.
That changed, he says, when Cuban exile bankers began financing Cuban exile businesses, real estate developments, and import-export ventures with Latin American firms. Moore Parks acknowledges the difference that made.
In many ways, it made the dream that we had always had of being a very international city come true.
Even the difficult moments, like the Mariel boat lift, when Castro sent 125,000 Cubans to Miami in 1980, enriched the city, says Mariel refugee Pedro Damian. Damian is a popular Cuban-American artist. He's the guy who designed the rooster sculptures in Little Havana and other Miami neighborhoods. He also helped eradicate the notion that all Marielitos were Castro's criminal outcasts, like Al Pacino's Scarface.
Miami ganó otras nuevas perspectivas, o sea, otras visiones.
Miami gained new perspectives, new visions through our experience of suffering Castro's communist system, says Damian. It nurtured and refreshed the cultural scene here. But even Damian concedes the Cuban phenomenon could sometimes darken the scene in Miami. Anti-communist intolerance, Cuban cronyism, and paramilitary recklessness too often cast the city in a negative national and international spotlight. That reputation hit its unfortunate low during the Elian Gonzalez debacle of 2000, when hardline exile leaders turned a 6-year-old boy into a political football. Still, a younger generation has brought more moderate Cuban-American voices to the forefront. Castro would no doubt call them the new gusanos. But one dictatorship's worms are another democracy's city builders. Miami and Fidel's gusanos turned out to be a magic partnership. For WLRN Miami Herald News, I'm Tim Padgett.